On the show today, we have Meyer Chatfield Group's John Moreno talking about the new tax bill and its effect on credit unions paying highly compensated executives in our industry. So check it out. How are you, John?
Doing well, doing well. It's a new year and I don't live in the Northeast. So I'm good. It's great.
My brother lives in the Northeast. He lives in Maine. Yep. And I don't think they've seen like 10 degrees in a month or so. It's crazy up there. It's like
brutal. One after another.
But it looks like it's sunny where you are, and we're going to talk about something else that's kind of sunny. It's the new tax bill. I think everyone has been kind of top of mind for everybody for the last couple of weeks here, and kind of its effect on credit unions paying highly compensated executives. So let's kind of get the summary here. What effect does this tax bill have on credit unions paying our highly compensated executives? And many and most of them are highly compensated for a reason. They're good people. So what's the effect here?
Well, as with anything that comes out of Washington, D.C., it is never just simple and, you know, three lines tax cut for the middle class, or tax cut for the population, tax cut for businesses, and, you know, so, and we'll leave everybody else alone.
Right.
That's never how it is. And so this came out of the tax bill, and basically what it is a 21% excise tax, which is equal, coincidentally, to our new business tax rate. So the reference goes to the section that determines the business tax rate, which is 21%. So it is an excise tax that's borne by the credit union, the sponsoring institution, on executives whose compensation exceeds $1 million per year.
Okay.
And it's up to the top five executives, but in the credit union space, we don't necessarily see that really bridging many other people aside from the CEO. Rarely have we had maybe a couple of others breach that threshold, simply because of, let's say, if they're a VP of lending and they have a huge lending shop and they've done a ton of stuff, there might be a reason for them to breach that. But traditionally, we're speaking only about the CEO that would be affected. And quite frankly, the CEO is not affected as much as the credit union is affected by the excise tax. And so that's the nutshell, or the core component in the tax bill. There are a couple of exemptions and a couple of inclusions that are also stated. One is that 457B plan payouts. So what this looks at is, it says basically the present value of future cash flows that you receive as compensation, so like post-retirement benefits or something like that, have to be included in this calculation as well, except 457B and pension 401k payouts. So they're not looking at those as part of this compensation matrix. They're really looking at your actual compensation, base plus incentive, and then any 457F or deferred compensation or parachute payments is what they call them, although we haven't really seen that used as much in credit unions. But those are the types of payment that they're really looking at this applying to.
So what does this mean for credit unions, though? I mean, because we're wanting to, you know, we're wanting to attract the best, the top talent. And in order to do that, sometimes you have to pay these people, you know, high amounts of money, and rightfully so, because they're very talented folks. And we have a lot of those in the credit union industry, but we want more people to keep our momentum going. So what does this mean for credit unions in regards to attracting this top talent that we have to pay for and compensate for? And then to keep them. So what does that mean?
Absolutely. It's going to present a bit of a change and probably paradigm for credit unions that are affected. Now, that's the first step is okay, who's affected by this? Who does this actually affect with the best data we have most recently, or the best data we can extrapolate from with decent confidence? Who does it affect? And right now, there's approximately 22 credit unions out of 5,800 or so that would be directly impacted on an annual basis because their CEOs make more than $1 million a year base and incentive compensation combined. So that's so in a nutshell, you go, well, 22 out of 5,800, you know, is it a big deal? Well, yeah, but there are 22 of the largest credit unions in the space, of course. And we're seeing more and more credit unions migrate into that space. And the problem is, just like the old alternative minimum tax and a few of the other tax code things that we've had, there's no inflation adjustment for this $1 million threshold. You know, if we look, you know, 10 years down the road, or let's say 20 years down the road, $1 million will have the buying power of maybe $500,000 today, which still a lot of money, but nonetheless, it's not the same amount of income that you would attribute it to today. It was, I think Howard Hughes first said $1 million isn't what it used to be, and then Ted Turner followed that up with $1 billion isn't what it used to be. So, you know, that inflation trend is not baked into the law. Of course, the law does have a sunset provision that affects different parts differently, of course. So we don't know, you know, long term, it will likely get adjusted somewhere down the road. Right. But for right now, it will affect year in and year out, approximately 22 to 35 credit unions, give or take, depending on reporting vagaries and whatnot. You know, we're always making inferences from data sets. Mm-hmm. But that's who would be affected because their base and incentive comp right now exceeds $1 million. And it's only a tax on the amount that exceeds that $1 million. So if they're making $1,050,000, the excise applies to the 50,000. It doesn't apply to the entire million.
Okay. Okay.
So it may not be a large enough magnitude for them to really worry. The second place this comes into play, which is really kind of an interesting factor as well, and it's one that affects my world very dearly, is the piece of deferred compensation. So in line with that 22 every year, or increasing on an annual basis, that are getting paid $1 million a year of base plus incentive comp, we also have this other compensation that's coming into play, which is like your 457F payouts. Mm-hmm. And that pushes that number up to between, call it 35 and 45 in any given year that are affected. And those are the ones where we're going to see kind of that left field effect where, wait, what do you mean there's an additional tax bill? If you remember during the financial crisis, there were a couple of large payouts under 457F that occurred and it hit the media and made a splash. And people were like, well, I don't know if the CEO is worth that. Or, you know, there's a whole, and there's a lot of math and calculation that goes into those. But just because of how credit unions are structured, their benefits tend to pay out in that manner. They don't pay out like a pension plan. They don't pay out like a for-profit plan. Mm-hmm. We don't have stock options. So that's really one of the only ways to convey value to the executive is with deferred compensation or base comp or your normal compensation. The deferred comp piece is where you can end up with a really kind of what I'd call that exogenous event affecting the credit union where everything's going great. You have a credit union who's maybe the CEO is maybe making 400,000 a year, 500,000 a year.
Right.
Now they're getting this deferred comp payout that's supposed to last them for the next 20 or 30 years of their life.
Right.
And it's, you know, $3 million. Well, the first 500 or not a 600 is not subject to the excise tax. But then the other, you know, $2.5 million is going to be taxed at 20%. The credit union's up with a $500,000 tax bill.
Oh, wow.
Day one.
Okay.
That's where we see the impact.
Gotcha.
And so, one thing we're advising people is just no matter what kind of deferred compensation plan you have, look at your comp, look at your deferred comp, look at other forms of compensation you're offering, and effectively project out what does this look like for you in the future, and what are those potential costs that could come down the road. Mm-hmm. And I want to come back to that word potential because there's some action being taken on the back channels to try and mitigate this, of course.
Okay.
So that's the first thing is really it could affect you on your normal compensation, but it really will have this outsized effect on deferred compensation plans. The second piece is understand what that means. What does that mean to me as a credit union? What does it mean to the board? What does it mean to the CFO? You know, model it out and understand what it means. And then what we think it will likely do is you're going to probably see a trend in deferred compensation in credit unions and quite frankly compensation in credit unions that starts to use either avenues that push more compensation through more in more friendly fashion to the executive, maybe use things like split dollar or other types of arrangements that are more tax advantageous both to the credit union and the executive. There's always the scale for all of these different plans. You know, one has exceeding longevity, the other type of plan is more expensive on the surface. There's all kinds of different balances, and a lot of folks choose between those effectively. This just adds weight to one side of the balance versus the other.
Gotcha.
And so you're having to reevaluate, is it still worth it? Should we change course? What should we do?
So
that's really what we see is probably a deeper evaluation of those more tax-friendly avenues. That just starts to make more sense at this point. Also, what we likely would expect to see long-term is like you've seen in for-profit corporations. Once their comp exceeds $1 million, if they've got enough to live on, they've got what they need, you know, in terms of income, they want the value. They don't necessarily want it to be de facto compensation. And so you're seeing, you know, stock units, restricted stock units, stock options, et cetera, being used as a form of compensation. Of course, credit unions don't have that. And so we likely will see compensation in excess of certain thresholds likely start to be moved over to deferred compensation or deferred comp-like plans. Go ahead.
Does this make credit unions attractive to work for? I mean, if you are a CEO or somebody in the C-suite, does this, because you're talking about basically kind of being creative here with compensation and the stuff that's going on. So does it make a credit union attractive to work for, or even a nonprofit for that matter? Because not only credit unions are going to be affected by this, but nonprofits are as well. So does it make, let's get back to credit unions. Does it make a credit union attractive to work for if they got to do all this type of stuff? Does the new tax bill make that a credit union attractive, or?
I don't necessarily think it truly affects the attractiveness of working for a credit union. So okay. If you remember when you're gaining your wisdom through life, they said, here's a couple topics you never touch on in mixed company. Number one is politics. Number two is religion. And I would add to that compensation.
Yeah, I would too.
I guarantee, your comments below the video when this goes up are, I mean, there's going to be something saying, it's unconscionable that a not-for-profit cooperative CEO is making more than $1 million. That comes out all the time without respect for the fact that, by the way, we're now competing with bank talent, which banks pay, generally speaking, a lot more than credit unions.
A lot more, yeah.
In terms of total value conveyed. So will it affect the competitiveness of credit unions? No, it really won't. It will force them to either construct a workaround. It will force them to evaluate the true worth mm-hmm. of that next dollar of mm-hmm. compensation past $1 million. But will it completely constrain a credit union from hiring that person that they feel is going to grow the organization going forward?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Okay, will it change the scope of the marketplace? Most likely not.
Okay.
Will it change how that comp is conveyed and arranged? Yes, most likely it'll have some marginal impact on that structure.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that, obviously credit union people are a different breed when it comes to working and compensation and all that type of stuff. But on the flip side, we got to compete in order to get that top talent, because like you just said too, I mean, banks are paying their people, huge amounts of money, and we got to be able to somehow compete with that. So, I mean, there's this, you're walking a fine line here between, hey, this is, we're a different breed, the money doesn't matter. But on the flip side, we got to be able to compete to get that top talent as well. So there's a middle ground in there somewhere that we have to find. And I'm just kind of seeing, gosh, how does this affect credit unions in their search for this top talent? Because compensation, I mean, it matters, at the end of the day, it does matter.
Oh, it absolutely matters. And the ability to offer competitive compensation matters.
Right.
Now, the interesting thing is when we look at, this is kind of an aside to the basic concept you just submitted, which is, when we looked at charters, we had to break out credit unions by charter type to construct this kind of workup of who's affected. And one of the things that we looked at was, you would think by definition, because of assets, federal charters would exceed state charters in this larger credit union category. So if we look at credit unions $1 billion and larger, mm-hmm. we would assume federally chartered credit unions would be larger in number than state chartered credit unions.
Yep.
That's not true.
Really?
They're much larger. They're larger in assets because, of course, you've got Navy and you've got a few very large players out there.
Yep.
But most billion plus credit unions are the majority. And it's not a super majority, but a majority of them are actually state chartered credit unions.
Interesting. Oh, my gosh.
And that comes back to this basic tenet or this basic precept of credit unions are going to act like water and they're going to flow to what's going to work best for their membership and for their constituents. And mm-hmm. so the state charter usually has better field of membership conventions versus the federal charter,
true.
Less restrictive.
True.
So, so a credit union that's really using that community charter to the best effect is going to seek that charter that allows for that to occur. When you go to compensation, that $1 million threshold, again, it affects at this point a pretty low number of CEOs in the entire marketplace. What it will likely do, the value will still find a way to be conveyed. It will just be conveyed under either a different form, using different timing.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll get there, but because there's that threshold of, I'll just go work for the community bank, or I'll go work for this other financial cooperative. And we need to keep that talent in the space. You're absolutely correct.
Yep.
But I do see that shaping the conversation in the future. And most credit unions should be aware at this point that there is a potential cost. Now they should be able to ask the question, okay, what is this? How do we calculate this cost? Mm-hmm. What is it to mm-hmm. us? Now, earlier I said potentially, so let's come back to that word potentially. CUNA issued a write-up and doing their job. Their job is to advocate for credit unions. And one of the pushbacks was, wait a minute, how did this this tax, this excise tax that affects credit unions get through without a lot of, you know, aggressive pursuit by CUNA or by the trade organization. And one of the things that they responded with, which is correct, is the tax exemption for credit unions was a more important aspect of this than the comp.
Yeah.
I just, you know, if you had to prioritize, what do we want? Tax exemption intact, comp, we can figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that that's through, what they're looking at is they're trying to say, okay, if what if a credit union had a deferred compensation plan that was established prior to this law being passed, and now that plan is going to trigger this 21% excise tax and a huge hit,
mm-hmm.
is there a way we could possibly grandfather in that language so that they're not subject to this excise tax for that because it was in place before the date, as long as it doesn't get changed between now going forward.
Mm-hmm.
That's one avenue that could occur. I don't know in the likelihood of success on that approach, but mm-hmm. that is one. You know, the problem is that $1 million number, when you get to that number and over, you start to run into a situation where there's less and less sympathy for that individual.
True.
You know, you make over $1 million and you're complaining about taxes. No, I feel bad for you. And so that's one of the challenges. And also, when you look at the scope of the individuals affected, it's not as many individuals as you would, you know, if it was a third of the industry, you're going to hear a clarion call to action.
That's significant.
But if we see inflation continue and compensation at the levels we've seen historically,
mm-hmm.
anywhere from 5 to 8, 10%, depending on the institution, how fast it's growing, we're going to see that group grow. In fact, it's been growing at probably 1 to 1.5% clip.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, like you said, as credit unions continue to grow, so is the salary. Yep. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And especially as they consolidate.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got both of those trends that are going to push that. So our view is, okay, number one, we have the rules as they are today. Calculate, figure out what it means to you, what it means to your deferred comp plan if you have mm-hmm. one. What it means to potential deferred comp plans you're considering. Calculate that out, understand it, you know, make that part of the equation and use that as one of the weights on the scale to mm-hmm. figure out which type of plan makes the most sense for you. Second, use any avenue that you can to try and fit additional compensation through the model in line with tax law, but really trying to convey value to the executive under the plan mm-hmm. in a way that's less tax onerous or less onerous under the tax law.
Okay.
And those are the key things. A third avenue, which we've seen discussion of, and it's kind of the third rail, is, okay, what if I have a 457F plan now? Can I change it to a different type of plan, perhaps, to avoid this tax liability?
Yeah.
And that is where you start saying, we need to wave in the attorneys, wave in the lawyers, because there is a language in the new tax bill which states that if an institution takes effort to restructure a compensation scheme or plan simply to avoid that tax burden,
mm-hmm.
Then they're allowed to go and issue further regulation towards that end. However, there is a executive order that was issued this year earlier, the 2-for-1 executive order, if you would, that we have to have reduction of 2 regs for every new reg promulgated, and or they have to be cost neutral. And that's really slowed regulatory rulemaking in the federal government.
Okay.
I think 4 new regs, if I'm not mistaken, last I read, had been passed this year mm-hmm. entirely across the entire executive bureaucracy. So that weighs against, okay, they're going to come out and issue this additional regulation really quickly. They'd have to figure out what other 2 they want to strip off.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. that, under at least the Trump administration, will likely persist and make it difficult for them to really put teeth into that aspect of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
But it is there. So if an executive says, you know, hey, I want to terminate my F plan and replace it with something else,
mm-hmm.
again, wave in the attorneys, because at some point you may need them to advocate on your behalf.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you want to make sure that all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted and the logic is sound. We've seen a couple credit unions do that. But again, we want to make sure that they're advised correctly and properly by the proper legal authorities on that front.
Goodness gracious. This is such a hot topic right now. And then, like you said, it's kind of a touchy topic as well, because like you said, anytime you're talking compensation, you gotta tread lightly. But it's our new reality now, especially with the new tax bill going through and credit unions growing and consolidating and trying to attract this top talent and keep it. These are the discussions that we need to have. So this is really good stuff here, John. Anything else to wrap up here? Any final thoughts for credit unions out there to do in the meantime? And
No, I mean, basically coming back to the blocking and tackling, really just look at your current plan, understand what the potential ramifications are of the new tax provision, the excise tax provision would be to your existing plan, future payouts that you expect. If you're constructing a plan, putting a plan in place, look at how it will affect that. Maybe mm-hmm. it changes the balance on the scales yeah. a little bit.
Yeah.
And then third, just make sure you work with your reputable, well-known entities in the space to move forward and help with that effort. That's what we're here for. We basically do all this fun research. The right before I think Christmas break it was is what the Congress decided to actually get to work. Yeah. So nothing like jamming it in the last week or a couple of weeks of the year. But no, our job is to dissect this, listen to the attorneys, listen to the accountants, figure out how to structure everything correctly, and make sure everybody's taken care of and that the plan works the way that it's supposed to.
Good message. Good message to end on, John. Thank you so much. John Moreno, Meyer Chatfield Group. Let's chat again. Look forward to seeing you at GAC as well. Good job.
Awesome. I'll see you there. Take care.